by two.
Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. This is Bronco Tuesday, where we discuss the Olympic sports at Boise State. Now here are Paul J. Schneider, Chris Walton, and the voice of the Broncos, Bob Beeler, on 670 KBOI.
Well, looking high and low, but I don't see Bob Beeler anywhere. He's in San Diego getting ready for tonight's basketball
You'd
game.
You'd have to look very low.
Yeah, between Boise map, State anyway. And San Diego. Women's track and field in the house. Assistant coach Travis Hartke, distance coach at BSU, is here, along with Sadie Henderson from Corvallis, Montana. I used to have a place in Corvallis, Montana. That is very nice. Along with Allie Ostrander, and Allie probably likes this weather, being from Alaska, huh?
Oh, it's great.
just perfect weather. Coach, let's talk a little bit about conference meet. You finished third, beating only 17 points for everything. Pretty good meet, especially for the distance runners.
Yeah, pretty good meet. We were in the team hunt, which it's our first time since we've been here that we've really had a chance and been close to, you know, finishing first as a team. So we made some strategical moves during the meet to help us with points and whatnot, and the girls really came out and competed really, really well. So had a lot of things go right.
Sadie, you won the 800-meter title at the Mountain West, and so you set a championship record last year and broke in both the preliminaries and finals over the weekend, and then you were on the distance medley relay as well. Pretty good meet for you.
Yeah, it was awesome. I wasn't really expecting it to go as well as it did, so came out of it really happy.
Now, you came out of it well enough to continue on, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I went into it without having the qualifying standard for nationals, so that was really the big goal. So on Friday, that's where I was putting all my focus, and then I ended up being able to come back and beat that time on Saturday.
Tell us how the altitude conversion works.
Basically, the farther the distance, the bigger conversion you get. For example, our DMR ran 11:05, mm-hmm. which wouldn't get us into nationals, but because you get a 10-second conversion on it, it basically put us down to 10:55, which is the top time in the NCAA right now. So it helps. You probably can't qualify in the 5K there. It's really hard to qualify in the 3K, but I think in the 800 and the mile, the conversion really helps you.
Allie, you're kind of running away from your distances, right, in indoor meets. Don't you like to go a little further?
Yeah, the mile was kind of shorter than what I'm used to, but I think it was good practice for anchoring the DMR.
The fact that I liked what you said afterwards when you got passed by Alexis turning for home in the mile, you said it's the first time that you've ever gotten passed up and beaten and enjoyed it.
Yeah, when she went by me, I thought that she was from a different team, but then I saw it was her, and that made me really happy. Going 1-2 was something really special.
Yeah, it was pretty fun to watch. I was on the corner basically with about 100 meters to go, and Allie was battling with Edna Kurgat, and Alexis just gained a bunch of steam. Allie pulled ahead a little bit on the inside, and Alexis came around the outside, and it was fun to watch them go at it the last 100 meters.
Yeah, I saw the video, and the video was like the last 60 meters, I guess. It didn't really show the passing.
Yeah.
So
Alexis, that's the second time she's won a Mountain West title, right?
Yeah, she won the 800 as a freshman.
Oh, wow.
And then won the mile. So
now who goes on to nationals?
We've got Sadie in the 800, who's ranked are you fifth or sixth? One of those. I think you're fifth. Allie in the 3K, who's ranked 10th. Our DMR is ranked number 1, and then Claire O'Brien is ranked, I think, 9th in the 5K. So a big group, bigger group than Boise State's ever had, and I think a group that we have a chance to score some good points and finish really high as a team at nationals.
It's exciting stuff, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So, yeah, it's kind of we've kind of been the last couple of years on the verge of getting a bigger group to nationals. Like, we've been right behind qualifying on the DMR the last 2 years, and but this indoor season went a little better than the last couple have, and so we're in a good place.
Now, Sadie, you run the 800 on the DMR, is that right? And Allie runs the mile, is that right?
Yeah.
And Sadie runs the 1200 usually.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. My mistake. Yeah. So okay, go through the DMR. Who runs in?
So Sadie in the 1200, to Chelsea Walker in the 400, Alexis Fuller in the 800, and then Allie in the mile. So
pretty good group.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, we're talking with Boise State Indoor Track and Field. We'll be back. It's 8:44.
Now back to Bronco Tuesday on 670 KBOI.
Boise State Track and Field in the house today. Assistant coach for distance runners Travis Hartke is here, along with Sadie Henderson and Allie Ostrander. Coach, what's it like in Texas? You're going to College Station for the Nationals. My daughter lives in Austin, so I know it can be warm down there. It's been stormy and cool down there. What kind of facilities do they have, and how's the altitude and all that?
It's a sea level, and I've been there quite a bit because used to be in the Big 12, and really nice facility. It's a different type of indoor track, I would say, because the oval sits really far away from the stands. There's actually a 60-meter. The 60 meters is right in front of the stands, so it's away from the stands. It's Sadie's race there last year. I would think as an athlete racing, it'd be kind of hard to hear the crowd as opposed to the crowd's usually kind of right next to everything. But it's a phenomenal facility. There's a indoor football field right next door for warm-ups and everything like that. So, that's why it's been there. It was there last year. It's there this year, and they host a lot of meets there.
The Jackson facility here, similar, not too similar?
Well, the oval's similar. The surface is a lot newer. I think it's a brand new surface. But the oval is very similar. The one thing that's different, very different, is on our Jackson's track, the 60 meters is right down the middle. And on the one at Texas A&M, it's basically on the outside between the oval and the stands. So it puts a lot of distance between the stands and the oval itself.
Okay, not far away from the outdoor season.
We're not.
These two, yeah, no rest for the wicked, right? These two guys fit in your plans for outdoors as well.
Yeah, I think indoors is a step to the process to outdoors. We have a couple weeks before we start outdoors after we finish indoor nationals, and we go to Stanford the last weekend in March. So it's a step.
Now, the DMR, a legit chance to get a first place?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're in the mix. I mean, I don't doubt what Allie can do on the anchor. And, you know, a lot of times you got to be in the race, getting it to the miler. And then it really comes down to what your miler can do and how they finish. So I think we're legitimately in the mix of, we've run the fastest time. And the national champion probably won't go too much faster than that. So. I think we definitely can be.
What teams do you expect to be up there toward the top?
It's probably us, Oregon, and Stanford. Oregon and Stanford had, over the weekend, a bunch of their girls run really fast in the mile. But the thing is, declarations come out today. The thing is, who knows, a lot of those girls may be doubling back, and that'll affect things as well. So we'll be pretty fresh. Sadie will be in the 800 meters, which is about an hour and a half beforehand, but should be fine. So other than that, everyone else will be their first race of the day.
Looking for a big season outdoors. You had a great season indoors. It's not over yet. Outdoors, are you loaded for bear?
Yeah, I think we're going to be really good outdoors. I think, you know, kind of some of the, if you look at the performance lists in the Mountain West, we're pretty high on all the distance rankings, and that's just a step to what we can do outdoors, and a lot of our preparation and stuff. It's not like we've done a lot of race pace type workouts already. We'll get to more specific workouts as we get to the outdoors, which will help us run faster.
All right, a question for the runners. You guys are putting bricks in the wall for a pretty good program here at Boise State. How did you get here? Well, I'll start with Sadie. And how do you feel about being part of the basis of this program?
When I was recruited, I think Coach Harkey and Coach Immels had only been here for a year or two, so that was a whole part of the recruiting process, was that I was going to come and help build the program. And it's taken some years for sure. I know, like, the first couple of years I got here, it was still transitioning from the old group to their group that they were recruiting. I think my class was, like, the first full class that they recruited. It's definitely taken a couple years, but it's really cool to see. I mean, I'm in my fourth year, and I'll go into my fifth year next year, and it has changed so much over the last couple of years, and I don't know, I'm really proud to be a part of that.
Allie?
Yeah, I think I agree with what Sadie said, that when I was recruited, part of the allure of Boise State was that it was more of an up-and-coming program instead of something that was already established, and that made me really excited to be a part of a program that could really grow and develop in the time that I was there.
All right. Best of luck, guys, coming up in the Nationals. That'd be cool to get your distance medley relay team number one in the nation, or number two or three. But number one would be really nice. So good luck there on the 9th and 10th, and we'll probably be talking to you after that.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you. Travis Hartke, the distance coach, Sadie Henderson, and Allie Ostrander. It's 8:52. KBOI News Time, 8:53. Through the magic of Alexander Graham Bell.
What a guy.
Yeah. Let's go down to San Diego, California, and Bob Beeler. Bob, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
Good. Good. Just talked to a couple of people faster than you.
Well, I think there are a lot of people that are faster than me, but I think the people you had are probably really fast.
Yeah, so. Really fast. So
today we've got Boise State, San Diego State. Important for Boise State as far as an at-large spot. I think Boise State, if they still want to have a shot at a large spot, has to win this one, and has to win the final game against Wyoming, get to the final. So it's big. San Diego State has played well of late. They've won four in a row, although last couple have been against Air Force and San Jose, because of two Wyoming and UNLV. And the main reason I think they are doing better is that Trey Kell, their senior guard, is back after missing three games with an ankle injury. So since he's come back, they've kind of done better. And then looking at some of the tweets down here, I think that Malik Pope is going to play tonight. But that's kind of nothing has been formally said, at least. But last night it sounded like he kind of returned to practice, and people kind of expect maybe he's going to play.
He's been one of those guys that's had kind of the legal problems right now.
Yes, he's one of them. One of the couple that were held out. Everybody else seemed to get cleared quickly over the weekend. But looking at a couple tweets last night down here with some of the media members, I think, again, unless something happened this morning that they announced when I went to bed last night, nothing was finalized. But, you know, he's a guy that he's been their main starter. He was a guy that a lot of people thought would be one and done, 6'10 senior inside guy, had 18 points, 9 rebounds in Boise State's 83-80 win, averages 13.7 rebounds, pretty good athlete. Has started all 26 games that he's played in. So he would be a major miss if he does not play in the game tonight against Boise State, but we'll see if he's in there.
Yeah, he does offer big matchup problems for the Broncos. This is a game Chandler Hutchison at home went off for 44 points. That'd be nice to repeat, huh?
Well, I think it will be, and I think that San Diego State's obviously going to have to revisit how they decide to cover him. But I think what it means to me is Boise State's going to have to find, you know, other points. Nobody off the bench scored in that game. Williams had 16, Jessup had 10, Haney had 7, Sengfeller had 6, nobody else scored. You can't expect 44 from Chandler tonight. So, you know, if you get 20 from Chandler, that's a pretty good night. It's about his average. So, you know, that means he's, say, getting 20 less. And that means in order to get, you know, a winner, you're probably going to have to find 20 more points from other people tonight.
Yep. All right. Late start tonight, pregame at 8:30, tip-off at 9 o'clock, right here on Newstalk 670 KBOI. We'll look forward to the broadcast.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Thanks. Bob Beeler in San Diego.
If you're talking about it,
they don't care about the view. They're not there for a discussion.
We're talking about it.
Let's take a deep breath and not get too carried away.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul J. Schneider and Chris Walton on News Talk 670 KBOI.
Top of the morning, Paul J. and Chris. Thanks to Boise State Track and Field. Don't forget basketball. Action tonight, pregame at 8:30, tip-off at 9 o'clock, Boise State at San Diego State. All right, I want to know how you feel about this.
Okay.
Lisa Marie Presley and her former business manager tried to resolve their differences over her depleted fortune privately before she broke a confidentiality agreement and went public. This according to a lawsuit filed against her. Her business manager apparently could do what he wants and she couldn't say anything publicly. But she did. The suit filed Wednesday.
That almost sounds like a deal that her father would have signed.
Yeah.
Like with Colonel Tom Parker.
Yeah, in Los Angeles County Superior Court is one side of a bitter legal dispute between Elvis's only child and her former business manager, Barry Siegel. As reported previously, Presley also has sued and claims her $100 million fortune is down to $14,000.
Wow.
$14,000.
Okay, that's a big loss.
Because Siegel acted in his own best interests in making business decisions about how to spend her money. She claims reckless and negligent mismanagement in losing tens of millions of dollars and wants repayment.
Yeah. Well, and I know the arrangement that she had. I read about this years ago now she's close to 50 now, or she is 50,
right.
But so this was about 25 years ago. I think it was on her 25th birthday. She inherited essentially the Elvis Presley estate, which her mother had managed to put together back in the 70s.
Mother was a smart cookie.
Well, she was. Back in the 70s, after a celebrity had passed away, basically their image at that time could pretty much just be used by anybody. They were a public figure.
Right.
And you could, you know, put them in advertising or pretend that they were still alive, whatever you wanted to do. And Priscilla Presley took that to court. And so, long story short, which is probably too late anyway, but they got it to where you notice you never see pictures anymore of Elvis when he weighed like, you know, 300 pounds and was 40 years old. That's because in order for anyone to publicly use a picture of Elvis Presley, it has to be okayed by the Elvis Presley estate or the Graceland Foundation or whatever it's called. And she got to take that over when she was 25 years old. Lisa Marie did. And I think it was worth, like you said, it was worth about $100 million when she took it over.
Mm-hmm.
But she must have had the worst business manager since Colonel Tom Parker.
And of course, her business manager is saying it was her fault. The lawsuit they filed says Presley was kept informed of how her money was being spent, but twice lost a fortune because of out-of-control spending that she's blaming on other people now. I don't know. A closer look at the Provident lawsuit describes years of wild spending and a failure to heed warnings while at the same time ignoring an agreement to resolve the feud out of the public eye.
Yeah.
The ugly and high-stakes dispute was supposed to be discussed privately, but obviously it hasn't. The agreement was extended until last week, sometime around February 14. The lawsuit claims Presley and her representatives breached an agreement by a public filing. So
well,
it's a
she
said,
I was gonna
she
say,
said.
I was going to say what she got to lose, and the answer is $14,000.
Presley's charging that Siegel sold 85% of her interest in Elvis Presley Enterprises. What the?
Really?
Why the?
And he had the right to do that then.
Okay, say that was her $100 million.
Yeah.
So she still had $50 million and...
Except that he apparently managed the money and did so poorly. I wonder how much he ended up with.
He aligned himself with a famous investor with ties to the holding company of the American Idol TV show. Mm. She claims after the venture didn't work out, he started liquidating assets.
Well, and the reason I mentioned Colonel Tom Parker, Colonel Tom Parker, first of all, he wasn't actually a colonel. And second of all, he really had never been a business manager of anything until he hooked up with Elvis Presley. And Elvis trusted him. And if Elvis hadn't trusted him, chances are in 1977 when Elvis died, first of all, that might not have happened because Colonel Tom Parker, you know, didn't ever tell Elvis, you know, perhaps you should go to a doctor who doesn't prescribe you everything that exists.
Yeah, Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah, and... second of all, he didn't invest his money wisely. Like, for instance, Elvis's catalog of songs, and he got writing credits on a lot of songs. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were by Otis Blackwell and people like that, but he got writing credits on them. Colonel Parker sold that catalog for something like $35,000, even though it was probably worth $150 million, ultimately.
Yeah.
He didn't seem to understand how much money could be, you know, could really be made off the Elvis image and things like that. And, he wasn't a general, he wasn't an exploiter, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, and every year when you get the dead people earning report,
yeah,
he makes $60, $70 million.
Except that it's not him, you know, and stuff like that. But he just and Colonel Parker was the one who basically made all the deals for Elvis to star in one or two what were essentially B movies every year. Yep. Which is why all during the 60s, you know, rather than concentrating on touring and
music
and continuing with music and he was still a huge draw at that time.
Oh yeah.
But he made what Elvis later said were just a whole bunch of dumb movies.
Yeah.
Now, they're kind of entertaining, but they're kind of entertaining on sort of a schlocky way.
Yeah. Lisa Marie claims Siegel bought a $9 million English home. Listen to this. $9 million English home with money from her trust.
Mm-hmm.
Pledged the trust as collateral when he couldn't make a $6.7 million balloon payment.
And it was her trust.
Her trust. Not his. Hers.
Well, it seems as if she ought to get, well, I don't know. It seems as if she ought to get everything that he owns, at least.
Yeah. The trust was receiving millions of dollars in annual income when it was established, but excessive spending and reliance on credit far exceeded what the trust could pay her. So to meet her demands for cash, they took loans out on the trust and... Bingo, bango, bongo. How can you blow $100 million?
You know what?
I don't even feel sorry for him.
Personally, I don't know.
That's amazing. Amazing.
But that's very, you have to believe it, I guess, but it's very hard to believe that she was worth $100 million and now has $14,000.
I mean, you hear these stories with athletes. But this is ridiculous. KBOI News Time, 9:15.
Remember, you are listening to Paul, Jay, and Chris on 670 KBOI.
KBOI News Time, 9:20. The White House has something they issue every day called 1600 Daily. Obviously, the address of the White House, 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Correct.
And it talks about, sometimes it talks about what the president is doing. Sometimes it has opinions of what happened yesterday. And this one's kind of a mix today. There's a headline that says, "Turn Our Grief into Action," talking about the school shooting. It says, "President Donald J. Trump and Vice President Mike Pence addressed nearly 80% of the nation's governors yesterday," which would mean probably 39 or so of the 50, "at a bipartisan business session at the White House. Although the president highlighted many successes from the past year, including tax reform and early signs that tough sanctions against North Korea are working, he told attendees that one issue should be at the top of everyone's mind. Most importantly, we want to discuss the public safety in schools and public safety generally, but school safety, we can't have this go on," the president said.
Right.
"But we will turn our grief into action," President Trump continued. "We have to take steps to harden our schools so that they are less vulnerable to attack." The president specifically mentioned better regulating of bump stocks, addressing mental health concerns, and improving early warning response systems to help diminish the risk of violence. And I know people have a variety of opinions about that sort of thing. And there are people who say, you know, make a target harder than it is, not a soft target. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people who say, well, prevent this. And I don't know. I mean, it's difficult to prevent everything, especially in a country where you are free to carry arms, which means that occasionally, and probably more often than we would like, somebody who uses them incorrectly is about to use them.
Yeah, it said over the weekend there was a big movement, to do something about guns. And then yesterday it looked like business as usual, push for new regulation and strengthened background checks lost momentum. Lawmakers came back, and many of them view a debate about guns as unwelcome. It's become clear political realities were as locked in as ever. So,
the president publicly said, and it was kind of an interesting statement, he said that it's okay if we get into disagreements with the NRA once in a while.
Yeah.
He said, you know, it's
don't be afraid of the NRA.
Basically, he said, don't be afraid of them. And, you know, that's pretty much the same thing as saying, you know, don't be afraid of guns. I mean, they do already have regulations. We already know certain things about, you know, who can have what, and we just need to tweak it a bit.
But he did say about bump stocks that,
well, he was thinking of just, you know, issuing...
He's going to do it himself.
Yeah, issuing an order without Congress that says to just get rid of those.
That's
kind of interesting because
works,
It doesn't matter necessarily whether a president in the past, you know, however many decades has been Republican or Democrat. A lot of them didn't directly... they didn't directly speak about the NRA, as in, like, it's okay to disagree, it's okay to do these things like that. They just kind of said, well, we need to do something. Obviously, something must be done about this, something must be done about that. It's a unique situation in the world simply because it's in our Constitution that Congress cannot do anything about the a citizen's right to bear arms.
Right.
Interestingly enough, it doesn't say states can't do it, and states can regulate their own militias and things like that, and the National Guard and whatnot, or their state guard. And it's been interpreted that, you know, everybody basically just has the right to bear arms.
Do you think anybody will go that way?
No, I don't. Because none of the 50 states have, and I don't think anything big is going to happen about this. There are people who try to get rid of semi-automatic weapons all the time, and you know it's such a big percentage of the guns that are out there that I don't think it's I don't see it happening in my lifetime. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, probably not feasible for the immediate future.
Yeah. you know, and there are reasons. People are weird about the Bill of Rights because a lot of people forget that what the Bill of Rights are for is essentially to explain what Congress can't do to you.
Right.
Now,
true.
And what Congress can't do to a state, what Congress can't do to, you know, to mess up the country if they feel like it. You know, it's essentially a list of things, you know, here, okay.
And we assume nowadays that
Congress,
that's what they're doing.
Yeah, Congress gets together and they
screw things up.
They decide things, they make laws and things, but here are the things that they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about that coming up. KBOY News time is 9:26. We got news after this.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Paul, Jay, and Chris. More local talk with Nate Shellman is live this afternoon at 3 on 670 KBOI.
All right, it's 9:37. Let's go to the KBOI live line and Jim. Jim, good morning.
Morning, what's happening?
It's all you, baby.
I'm just doing right well. I'll give you my situation and my opinion. I've never been a gun person. We don't want to see me with a gun, and I don't want to see me with a gun. You know, I go with my experience. I've never been threatened by anybody with any kind of a weapon, you know, gun or knife. And until I am, you know, I don't live by what ifs. What if the government, you know, and these, you know, we got to defend our homes. Okay, what army do you expect to invade your home if you need an AK-47 or something? But, okay, now I'm going to pose this one about arming teachers. Has anybody ever thought that maybe a teacher finally would crack and shoot a student? Now, when I was in school, you know, there were some students that I just can't help think that a teacher would have liked to dispatch real quick.
It's not a perfect plan.
No.
A teacher that I saw on television yesterday said that, she said in my school where she teaches, she said they issue us cell phones that are to be used for school business and stuff, and it's essentially like you would have had a direct line to your classroom. Instead, they give them all a cell phone. And she said, we're not actually supposed to take them home with us. You know, they're for use and getting a hold of us during the day. And she said, I keep it under lock and key in my room, and it's been stolen twice. So she said, I just get the feeling that, you know, keeping guns locked up wouldn't work any better in the room. But it's like I said, there would be a lot of rules that would have to be changed or a lot of tweaks that would have to be made. And, you know, and yesterday I saw some members of a SWAT team, too, that said what we do, you know, essentially like going into an emergency situation where there's a shooter or something like that and clearing a building, all the different things a SWAT team does. They said if you knew how much training we had to be able to do that, you wouldn't want just anybody to say, okay, I can solve this. I'm going to run in there with a gun. But on the other hand, it's like anything else. There are people who know what they're doing, and then there are people who think they know what they're doing.
Well, it's like, you know, that the cops in Broward County, you know. You never know what you'll do. Trump says he'd charge in. Who knows? You know, when you're in that situation.
No, apparently he knows.
But I don't know. Most kids don't have empathy. Now, I got to admit, looking back on it, I was a well-behaved kid, you know. And I know there were some kids that really acted up. And I would think to myself, how would I want to be treated if I were the teacher? Of course, I was the only one that thought that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. But like I say, and it's not a perfect world. Sadly, kids should feel safe in schools. They should, you know, education and learning would be the only thing on their minds. But
see, I went to a parochial school. I can't see the nuns packing heat.
Well,
know what I'm saying?
From what I heard about parochial schools, and I never went to one, the nuns packed a ruler.
Yeah.
That would hit you over the head or whatever, you know.
And threw chalk.
So,
very
anyway.
Accurately, I might add.
Thank you much, guys.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
I don't know. It would require a lot of training, I think. I got an instant message here from Mike R. He says a few helpful facts. Of the 300 million guns in the United States, the NRA estimates that between 8.5 million and 15 million assault rifles are in circulation based on manufacturer data. That's at between 2.8% and 5.0%, which is not so dominating as some think. Well, I had said there were an awful lot of semi-automatics out there, but I didn't.
I didn't say assault
rifles. See, and I think of an assault rifle as something. Essentially, it's an assault rifle is used in war, or it's the style that is used in war, and quite often they can be either modified or simply. You can choose to whether they're a semi-automatic or a fully automatic. I mean, in war, they use fully automatic guns. But for the most part, the public doesn't. Well, I mean, the public doesn't have fully automatic guns, or for the most part, they're not supposed to. I mean, there have been three different acts, I think, through history, one of which was in 1968 that essentially outlawed them. And then in 1934, and then there was another one in 1986 that I think actually. They all kind of tweak the same laws, but, most modern weapons are semi-automatic because people don't just want a single shot gun, especially if it's for protection. You know, the chances are that you're going to
miss that first shot.
Well, yeah, the chances are that you're going to hit exactly what you want or only need one in a bad situation or, you know. When things are going wrong, the chances are you're only going to need one bullet are actually fairly remote.
Yeah. Let's go to Jeff of CUNA. Jeff.
Yeah, guys. You're talking about arming teachers. And you can go back last year, and I think it was KBOI, the TV, did a thing on it, and you can pull up the video. Garden Valley had semi-automatic weapons in their schools for six years now. No issues.
Well, and they have it clearly posted on their signs, too, that say, you know, don't bring a weapon in here because there are already weapons in here.
Well, and then you hear on, you know, your hourly news and everyone going, oh, my God, we can't have guns in schools. It's like... Well, they've been doing it for 6 years with no issues. And see, it's funny. It's just like the other one that no one talks about. Any school campus of any type in Utah, if you're a concealed weapons permit holder, you can carry on it. It's been that way forever. And you notice you don't hear anything about shootings in Utah schools because they're not a gun-free zone. Any adult... And you got to be an adult to get the concealed weapon. But any adult you find on that school can be carrying a weapon, and there's no issues. So it's kind of funny all this about, oh, my God, arming people, it's all a straw man, because there are a lot of examples where it's been done for years with no issues. But everyone's like, oh, my God, if we do it, there could be these problems. Like, no. You've already done the experiment. You caused the experiment.
What kind of gets me are the arguments on both sides where people seem to be able to predict the future, and they guarantee, like, for instance, that if we armed a whole lot of people, there would never be any problem because nobody who wanted to kill a whole lot of people would go anywhere near where people already are armed. Well, a lot of these guys are suicidal, so you bet they would. And besides, if people are insane, they don't necessarily think everything through now, do they?
Well, now, when you go to Utah, where have there been mass shootings in Utah?
I don't know. I don't think there have.
Trolley Square.
Trolley Square.
And the reason it was at Trolley Square is because what do the signs say going into that mall?
You know what? I don't know.
Yeah.
No guns?
Same as it does down here at Town Square Mall. Hmm. Yeah. This is a gun-free zone. Why do you think, and it was like a 17 or 20-year-old, why do you think he picked there instead of a school?
Well, are there signs at Town Square Mall that say gun-free zone?
Yes, there are.
Well, I've never seen one.
Look beside the door as you go in.
Okay.
Yep. Anyhow, but it's just funny.
Well, and the thing is, we're not looking for them because we're not carrying when we go there.
Yeah. But it's just interesting that Utah is a perfect example. Hmm. And it's been, and like I say, this is years, you know, I don't know how long. I forget when they passed that law in Utah that you could carry, but it's been many years ago. And so that's what I'm saying is all this, oh, my God, what if? Well, there you have a long-time running experiment in Utah of what happens if you do it.
There it is. It's right setting right there. And the same way with Garden Valley Schools.
Yeah.
6 years, no issues. Oh, well, but something could happen. Well, here's your experiment. Nothing's happened.
Yeah.
Anyhow, you guys have a good one.
Good stuff. Thanks, Jeff. 946.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 3, listen to Nate on 670 KBOI.
I like what I heard a guy say yesterday about, because somebody had said something about assault rifles, and he says, you know what an assault rifle is? It's a rifle that you use to assault someone.
Yeah.
Well, and he says, that can be a lot of different things. Mari says, Garden Valley is a very unique place. When my kids went to school there, he carried his gun to school in the truck rack so he could go hunting after class.
I did the same thing at Twin Falls High.
True. When I drove into the parking lot, I had my gun in the gun rack. It's a different world there. So something that works there will not work in the inner cities.
I had a shotgun in the trunk of my car
the country,
every day I went to high school, junior and senior years.
The country is a very large and a very diverse place with very disparate cultures and needs. I mean, all the countries of Europe could fit in half of this country, and look at how different all those countries are. We are like Europe in the diversity of culture and issue and need. What works in Garden Valley could never work in New York.
True, because somebody would have stolen my 16 gauge out of my trunk.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure they would now if it were visible.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't.
But yeah, good points there.
Yeah. Let's go to John of Boise. John, good morning.
Yeah, it is. Good morning. I like the last caller there. Good info. It's honest info.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing I look at, when we heard about the Columbine shootings,
mm-hmm.
Well, they violated 19 state and federal laws. Well, how many laws did this guy violate?
Well, you can go ahead and violate a million laws. If nobody knows you're going to do it, you're going to get away with it for a while.
Well, that's the thing. We always say that kind of facetiously, but every time there's something terrible that happens, we said, well, you know, there ought to be a law against that.
There
and
is.
We say, oh, by the way, there are laws against that. Occasionally, yes. People break laws.
And that's part of my call. Is we don't talk about the lack of enforcement. They don't enforce our laws, so we can pass another 20 or 30 more laws, and so us just don't enforce it except to control honest citizens.
Well,
that's,
you know,
what
yeah,
they do.
Yeah, like locked doors, right? Yeah.
Anyway,
locks
murder has been against the law forever.
It has, yes.
Why don't they just punish people who murder people the right way?
Well, they'll punish this kid, but
I
mean,
this kid, but 17 people are already dead.
The eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth thing.
They could have punished him before he murdered those.
They're going to punish him before he murdered them. What are you going to punish him for?
Well, he took knives to school. Took ammunition to school. There's a lot of things he was doing.
Well, they kicked him out of school.
Well, that's good. Let's transfer him to another school. That's what they do in a lot of areas. They just transfer the troublemaker instead of dealing with it. They're, in Idaho, I know they put people in for evaluation.
What yeah, but they hurt? Can't hold them forever.
No, evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we go back to the 60s, you could take a family member down and put them in an institution and have them evaluated. And then they had to come before a board if they needed to take medication, that you had to be there to make sure they're going to take that medication. And if it was more severe, they're not going to let that person out for a while.
Well, yeah, but how many times have you heard he was off his medication? He stopped taking his medication.
I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm just saying we need to focus on enforcing the rules. I'm quite sure we have rules for that.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, John. We're out
of
time.
I got several instant messages, but as you said, we are out of time for today. We might continue some of this tomorrow.
9:55. Don't forget basketball tonight, 8:30 pregame, 9 o'clock tip-off. Boise State at San Diego State. Bob Bila.